A little girl named Nikki once scolded her father for being grumpy while they weeded the garden together. "Daddy, do you remember before my 5th birthday? From the time I was 3 to the time I was 5, I was a whiner. I whined every day. When I turned 5, I decided not to whine anymore. That was the hardest thing I've ever done. And if I can stop whining, you can stop being a grouch." That father was Martin Seligman, and his daughter's words sparked a revolution in how we understand human thriving. For a century, psychology had obsessed over what breaks us – depression, anxiety, trauma – while ignoring what makes life genuinely worth living. This imbalance feels like studying only disease while never exploring health, or analyzing only divorce while never examining love. Seligman's insight was radical in its simplicity. If a child could learn to control negativity, perhaps we could all learn to cultivate genuine flourishing. What does it actually mean to flourish? For years, Seligman championed authentic happiness as psychology's North Star, but something felt incomplete. The word happiness had become problematic, overused, imprecise, too closely tied to fleeting cheerfulness. Think about how we use it. "I'm happy about my coffee" hardly captures the same depth as "I'm happy with my life." This linguistic muddle masked a deeper conceptual flaw. The breakthrough came in recognizing that well-being isn't a single thing you can measure, like temperature or weight. It's more like weather, a construct made of distinct elements that together create the experience of flourishing. This led to PERMA: positive emotion, engagement, positive relationships, meaning, and accomplishment. Each element stands independently, yet contributes to the whole. You might pursue deep engagement in work not for pleasure, but because losing yourself in a challenging task creates its own value. You might serve a cause larger than yourself not for warm feelings, but because meaning matters intrinsically. What makes this framework revolutionary is its blend of subjective and objective measures. Your well-being isn't just how you feel about your relationships, but includes how others actually feel about you. This transforms how we evaluate everything from therapy outcomes to government policies, shifting focus from momentary happiness to authentic human flourishing. Can we actually change our well-being, or are we prisoners of genetic temperament? The hedonic treadmill theory suggested we each have a happiness set point we inevitably return to, making self-improvement futile. Evidence now challenges this fatalism. Unlike dieting, where 95% regain lost weight, specific positive psychology exercises create lasting change. Consider the gratitude visit. Try 3 blessings. Each night for 1 week, write down 3 good things that happened and why. This 10-minute practice counteracts our evolutionary negativity bias. One therapist described Emma, a severely depressed, suicidal client who saw herself as pawn scum. After taking a character strengths assessment, Emma recognized her core positive qualities, created an action plan, and displayed a rare smile within days. Rigorous studies show these exercises dramatically reduce depression. 55% of patients achieve remission, compared to only 20% for treatment as usual and 8% for medication alone. Here's an uncomfortable truth. The mental health establishment has abandoned pursuit of cure for symptom management. Modern psychiatric medications work like quinine for malaria. They temporarily suppress symptoms but don't eliminate underlying causes. Both psychotherapy and medications face the 65% barrier, typically providing only 65% symptom relief, with placebos achieving 45 to 55%. Half the studies used for FDA approval showed no difference from placebo. Antidepressants only work reliably for very severe depression. Why can't conventional treatments break through? They're not self-reinforcing. Like skiing uphill, they require constant effort and their benefits fade once treatment ends. Positive psychology exercises become self-sustaining as people experience immediate benefits that motivate continued practice. Consider how we respond when others share good news. Celebrating others' triumphs predicts relationship strength better than how we handle conflicts. Unlike most therapeutic techniques that feel like fighting gravity, this approach becomes enjoyable with practice. True healing requires both minimizing misery and actively building well-being through skills that become part of who you are. Parents want happiness, confidence, and kindness for their children. Schools deliver achievement, thinking skills, and test preparation. This disconnect reveals education's fundamental failure, preparing children for workplace success while neglecting what makes life meaningful. At Geelong Grammar School in Australia, six-year-olds start each day sharing what went well, understanding how this improves mood. Fifth graders learn breadology, nutrition, and cooking, then share homemade bread with nursing home residents. These aren't extras, but core curriculum, positive psychology principles lived rather than studied. The Penn Resiliency Program's 20-year research across 3,000 children proves well-being can be taught, reducing depression and preventing anxiety, with effects lasting 2 years. Traditional education obsesses over cognitive abilities, but achievement problems often stem from character deficits. Angela Lee Duckworth's research shows self-discipline predicts academic success twice as strongly as IQ. Grit, extreme persistence combined with passion, accounts for extraordinary achievement. Anders Ericsson's research reveals world-class expertise requires deliberate practice, 10,000 hours for pianists by age 20, not innate genius. At West Point, grit predicted completion of grueling summer training better than any other measure. Extraordinary achievement follows a log-normal distribution. Someone exceeding another by 50% across 8 factors becomes 25 times more productive because genius factors multiply rather than add. General George Casey envisioned an army as psychologically fit as it is physically fit. After 8 years of combat rotation, the Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Program aimed to shift 1.1 million soldiers toward resilience and growth rather than just treating PTSD. The Global Assessment Tool measures emotional, social, family, and spiritual fitness. By fall 2009, over 800,000 soldiers had taken it, revealing that psychological fitness increases with rank, and higher emotional fitness correlates with fewer PTSD symptoms and lower healthcare costs. The program's innovation addresses post-traumatic growth, teaching soldiers that shattered beliefs are normal trauma responses, not character defects. It provides anxiety reduction techniques and guides trauma narratives, acknowledging how loss and gain, vulnerability and strength coexist. Research shows 61.1% of airmen tortured by North Vietnamese reported psychological benefits. The mental toughness component teaches Albert Ellis's ABCD model. Emotional consequences stem from beliefs about adversity, not adversity itself. Despite concerns about resistance, the program received an extraordinary 4.9 out of 5.0 rating. Sergeants called it the most insightful training they'd received. This collaboration provides unprecedented research potential. Data will reveal whether emotionally fit soldiers suffer fewer illnesses and whether psychological fitness reduces combat wounds. Among 120 heart attack survivors, optimism was the only reliable predictor of survival over 8.5 years. Traditional risk factors like blood pressure and cholesterol failed to predict outcomes. 15 of the 16 most pessimistic men died, compared to only 5 of the 16 most optimistic. The Veterans Affairs Normative Aging Study showed optimists had 25% less cardiovascular disease than average, while pessimists had 25% more. Most definitive is Sheldon Cohen's research deliberately infecting volunteers with rhinovirus. People with high positive emotion developed significantly fewer colds, with reduced inflammation through lower interleukin 6 levels. 3 mechanisms explain this. Optimists maintain healthier lifestyles, cultivate richer social networks, and show stronger immune responses with more T lymphocytes and better heart rate variability. This traces to Seligman's work on learned helplessness. Animals with control over adverse events remained resilient, while those without became passive. People who view setbacks as temporary, changeable, and situation-specific bounce back quickly. Positive health isn't merely the absence of illness, it's an actual state of flourishing. GDP measures only production volume, ignoring well-being. Divorces, accidents, and antidepressant sales boost GDP while reducing life quality. U.S. GDP has tripled over 50 years while life satisfaction flatlined. Depression rates have increased tenfold in wealthy nations, anxiety has risen, and social connectedness has plummeted. Money and happiness correlate strongly among the poor, but above the safety net, diminishing returns kick in rapidly. The richest Americans score 5.8 on life satisfaction, identical to the Pennsylvania Amish and Inuit. The vision for 2051: 51% of people worldwide flourishing across positive emotion, engagement, meaning, relationships, and accomplishment through positive education, resilience training, and well-being business practices. Unlike happiness alone, well-being includes objective components, not just how you feel about relationships, but how others feel about you, not just your sense of meaning, but your actual service to something larger. The revolution starts with recognition. Material prosperity should serve well-being, not vice versa. We have perfected survival while neglecting thriving. Will you cultivate gratitude, build resilience, pursue meaning, and strengthen relationships? Your well-being isn't a luxury, it's the whole point. Choose flourishing.